Okay, I'm calling the meeting to order at 7:30 p.m. and I am appointing Diane D'Annunzio for Steve Clark. Okay, next order of business, approval of minutes of December 11th, 2024.
Oh, I don't have them in front of me. There was one question I had. It had something to do with what Patrice said. Sorry, I need to pull them up. Spoke to a person. Do we have a name for that person?
It might have been said that way because we weren't allowed to divulge the name at the time.
Oh, didn't read well.
Okay.
Should we say that we couldn't divulge it? I mean, it sounds like they're poor minute taking and it's not. I just, when I read it, I thought, well, this doesn't read well.
Was it under four that Pete Carson stated staff met with someone about a right of way?
Might have been. Someone. Yep, that was it. Is there another word?
Member of the public? I don't know.
Yeah. Anything that sounds better than she spoke to someone. Can you say an anonymous person?
I think member of the
public
would be.
Yeah, member. Yeah.
You could just reference
an
a resident.
Individual or
a
resident?
Resident.
Yeah.
Met with a resident. How's that?
That's better.
Okay.
I mean, if I start laughing at it, I'm sure somebody else will.
Jim's laughing.
Yeah. That was the only thing that caught my eye.
Anyone else?
No, I don't have anything.
You have a motion.
I'll move to approve them with the correction.
I'll second that.
Moved Darlene, seconded Diane.
Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's 70700. Residents Forum, if anyone wants to speak about anything that is not on the agenda.
Do we have any residents present? I can't see.
Yes, we have Andrew Lottiga.
Okay.
And
Brian Mensinger, 12 Brian Drive.
Okay. Thank you. Staff reports.
Well, since the last meeting, we have let's see, I'm trying to think of who. Oh, I finalized the site selector information and sent that in for the cider mill property. I met with Mr. Taylor to do that, and I'm dealing with somebody at Advanced CT for that project. I don't know when they'll get it up online, but we ended up finishing that and getting the information to them. You will see in front of you for later on discussion the lot coverage and building coverage requirements that were gathered for you guys to discuss. Mike and I met just the other day with somebody who is looking at purchasing the Phillips property on Notch Road, and wondering what he might be able to do with that. So we met with him and discussed the approved plan and what's allowed over there. We did talk very briefly about gravel bank opportunities, which seems to be something that might be in the far out part for him. I'm not sure there's much to gravel over there, but we basically said he'd need to talk to an engineer about that. Other than that, it's been kind of quiet. I mean, a week of that was the holidays. So that's about all I can think of at this point.
I have a question about the gravel part. Mm-hmm. I know the residents up on Wall Street, way up on the top, were concerned when Bill went in, and I thought we had, I guess it doesn't really, I don't know if it would be a new thing, but I thought one of the things that we had agreed on that there wouldn't be any blasting or undermining or taking out removal of materials.
Well, he didn't ask for that. He didn't ask for any kind of earth removal permit. What he did ask for, and you did grant with some strict conditions, was for him to bring in product and crush it. And he's allowed to do that a minimal amount of time during the year. And he's got to tell us when that's going to be and all of that. But yeah, no, we didn't discuss earth removal at all that I remember. And he didn't apply for that.
Okay.
I think they may have been concerned about the crushing and the sounds. I do know that, but I don't know about the rest of it. I'm just not so sure there's anything left there to take out.
Yeah. And I know that there's been huge concerns about blasting and taking things out, and because it affects the wells.
Right. But he doesn't have the permission to do that.
Right. I just didn't know if, I guess every time it changes hands, it changes rules, right? There's nothing.
No, he's operating under the same rules. If this gentleman wants to come in and try and do an excavation or earth removal permit, he's got to go through the process and the public hearing, and you know, that's all up to you as to how you if you were to approve it, what kind of conditions and what he can do there. And again, I don't know how much is left. I know there was a lawsuit over that property because I think they dug down a little too deep in certain areas. I know there's wetlands on that property, so just not really sure without an engineer going out and doing some work there. There's really not much we can really even talk about at this point. But yeah, he's not allowed to, as Bill was not allowed to actually remove anything there. He can bring stuff in, crush it, and take it away.
Okay.
And he can store equipment there.
Patrice, that lawsuit you just mentioned, I'm assuming that's attached to the land?
No, I don't. It wouldn't be attached to the land. It would have either been a suit against the town for the permission to do the permit, or it would have been against the property owner because he overstepped his permit. I'm not really sure, Kwan. I've not looked at the lawsuit. All I know is that there was one, but it wouldn't be anything that runs with the land. It would have had to do with either the permit that the commission granted or the property owner at the time overstepping the permit. Okay. I don't know if anybody is on the commission that remembers that.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Okay.
Mike, did you have anything?
Nothing, I think, really to add. We've had our, you know, some of those meetings with non-anonymous residents. We've been going through some sections of the regulations and may have some additional amendments that we may suggest. I think we may talk about some of them later, right? You want to do that at the end, Patrice?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, we had a little bit of a quiet break during the holidays. That's about it.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? Seeing none, we'll move on to the first continuation of a public hearing. Zoning regulation amendment to section 450-6.1N12A, traditional multiple dwelling complexes for elderly seniors, reducing the resident age restriction from 62 to 55 years of age. Michael Bagnacki, number TL-24-5.
Is that my cue?
It is.
Okay. So, hi. So, I'm Eddie Joy. I'm an attorney from Manchester, representing Mike Bagnacki and MTS Builders here today. I assume many of you probably already know him. And we are talking about 7 Loomis Road, obviously here in Bolton. It is a 6-unit apartment building that presently we had put a deed restriction on for the age of 62 or older for that property. We are now seeking to make that an age restriction of 55 or over. I see that Patrice provided us with a letter here from the Capital Region Council on Governments that they have reviewed this plan for the age restriction reduction to 55 years, and that they see that there is no conflict. Let me see where they put it. Sorry. Defines no apparent conflict with regional plans and policies and concerns of the neighboring towns. And it looks like they sent those to the planners, this letter to the planners in Andover, Glastonbury, Hebron, Manchester, Vernon, and Coventry. So it is dated the 6th. And interestingly enough, that Coventry and Manchester are two of the towns. I did a little bit of research. You'll see I provided some information there that it is in both towns that 55 and over is allowed. So in case, I'm sure you folks all know it, but the 62 and over restriction is by federal law and Connecticut state law mandatory in public funded complexes. And so obviously this is not a publicly funded complex, this is private. And that is why we are seeking to do it through the deed restriction. So the language in, let me make sure I got this right. The language in Coventry, you'll see I put a star there. They define senior housing as housing in which at least one member of the household is at least 55 years of age, and which no more than one member of the household may be less than 55 years of age. And that is the same sort of restriction we're going to be looking for here. And then the other one I did was Manchester, and that is here. And it says in Manchester, you'll see I starred the number 2 there in section 20.03, that an elderly deed restricted independent living unit shall be occupied by at least one person 55 years of age or older. And that the unit may be occupied by a surviving member of the household that does not meet that minimum age of 55 under a circumstance where the 55 and over person is deceased. So I think, globally, obviously the Capital Region does not oppose this, does not feel that we are infringing upon or acting in conflict with other towns that surround here. And so we would ask that it be allowed. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions from the commissioners online?
Just one quick one for my clarification. So for example, if there is a individual that is 54 years of age that will be turning 55 in that same calendar year, whether it be in January or December, is the hope to allow that person that is currently 54 to be eligible to move into this particular property residence if they're turning 55 in the same calendar year?
I don't know that me as, or Mike as the landowner, would be allowed to make that determination. The deed restriction is going to say 55 and over. And I think the question would be, where would we draw the line? 1 month till 55, 6 months to 55. So I think it would have to be, the onus would be on us to say it's 55 on the date they signed the lease.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a question to that. In Manchester, on the elderly deed, it talks about surviving member. Is this only in case of death? What happens if a 58-year-old male decides to move to Florida and leaves the property to?
Well, I would say surviving member indicates just who's death.
Left. It's not necessarily triggered by death.
So let's say the two parties divorced and the younger person wanted to stay. I would think we would have to move to evict.
Surviving, I would think, speaks to death.
I would think so.
And that's not just for the remainder of the lease, that's for as long as they stay there and pay.
Correct. Well, that would not, no, I'm sorry. If the lease were to expire, I don't know that we would be able to hold them over under the age restriction. I guess that's something we'd have to think about. But
I mean, it could be 11 months and 29 days.
True, it could be 2 days. Yeah, the person could sign the lease, move in, and die, right?
Yeah.
So
the same dilemma would be under a 62-year-old.
Correct. The lowering it to 55 would not remove this death and remainder concern.
I just saw the word surviving.
Yeah.
Just assume.
I would say it means
that. Sense, remain. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions for the commission?
I have to stall this until I get more information as I talk to Patrice about this, because there's a lot of unanswered questions that I'm not finding or receiving answers to. And I'm going to table this until I get those answers.
Now is the time to ask the questions.
Well, no, actually now is not the time, because it's going to make a lot of people upset.
Well,
so
we have questions put to us that we're not, I'm unaware of anything.
Nope, it doesn't involve you. It involves the town.
But you're on. Well,
if I had the ability, I would object to the tabling. This is our second night here.
This is a public hearing. Now is when all the questions.
Well, I'm not quite sure how this building got the CO in the first place.
Well, that's not what we're discussing right now. What
correct.
We're
so right I am definitely is, not going.
Text amendment.
I am not going to approve any further occupancy of this building where I haven't even been. My first questions about this building have been answered before it got the CO. So that being said, you're not going to get a yay from me. And we'll leave
okay,
it there.
You have a position, but no questions. That's all right. You can do that.
Of course I can.
I just want to make sure that we take care of everybody before we move to the residents. Okay. Are there any further questions or comments from the audience?
You would, please. I come from the machine tool industry, so bear with me on this.
Yeah, this is Brian Mensinger again.
Yes. It says here that the square footage shall be not greater than 1,000 square feet in section 12B1. No dwelling shall have a floor greater than 1,000 square feet. My quick back of the envelope indicates that it's roughly 1,140 minus whatever the thickness of the interior wall is. So my question is the current square footage of each unit or each dwelling, excuse me.
Yeah, I'm sorry, which document are you referring to?
I'm looking at the this layout quick thing. And it says no dwelling shall have a floor area greater than 1,000 square feet. My calculation of back of the envelope indicates that it's 1,140 square feet minus whatever the interior wall chews into that all the way around the perimeter of each dwelling. What is the actual square footage of each dwelling?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Cropley. We're not really even considering the building. We're just considering changing the age restrictions from 62 to 55.
Oh, I understand that, but I'm looking at this from a point of view of, is there other issues with this particular traditional multiple dwelling complex that has to be addressed within this, i.e. that for specifics? As the builder, what was your square footage on that?
So I can answer that question.
Well,
the living area is 20 by 50, 1,000 square feet. There's a covered rear patio, which is not living area. And there's a 10 by 10 storage area.
Okay. So
which is not,
basically not my layout does not indicate that overhang in the front end, which I didn't realize was 10 feet. Okay.
Yeah.
Mike, are you taking that from the outside, the exterior?
And that is exterior dimensions too.
Okay.
So it's even less, probably.
Okay. Or I stand corrected.
950 or 960 or something.
Fair enough. Okay.
So I just do want to be clear. Actually, you done, sir? I don't want to talk over you.
Go ahead.
I just want to be sure, you know, this building was approved. You were here for that. Got a certificate of occupancy. This issue has never been raised before. We were here, what, last month? This issue did not come up. And I don't think it's relevant to the discussion at hand, and that we are here for a change in the deed restriction from a minimum age of 62 to a minimum age of 55. So,
thank you. Fair enough. I will digress at this point and go to the matter at hand. Generally, in the various things that I've looked at associated with what is considered elderly and seniors, two different things, first off. Secondly, Merriam-Webster defines a senior citizen as an older adult, and especially one as the age of 65 or older. The state of Connecticut, in specific language, has stated a definition of 65 years of age or older. Generally recognized, because each thing, it's fluid, and I understand that. But the government has recognized senior is a chronicle age of 65. And traditionally, 65 is recognized as the commencement of senior citizenship, a standard from the 1935 Social Security Act in the United States. I can understand the 62 because it's a general floating item. But to bring it down to 55, I find it very tough to swallow.
May I ask a question? Why? Well, what do you see as the problem? What?
Because if certain items are recognized as an age of senior, of whether it's 62 or 65,
but
55 becomes less than that, which should bring in other restrictions that are not applied to this particular property.
Would you feel the same way if they changed the definition in Social Security to 70?
Oh, they already have compared.
But that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that when they set an age limit, they're sort of looking at the entire demographic. And I might be wrong. It's just a thought that what they're looking at is that they want a quiet place. In other words, they don't want to have a family with, you know, 2-year-old, 3-year-olds running around screaming, you know, or even worse, 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. But at the same time, I think that's the whole idea, is that it's a set, a homogeneous group of people who have the same sort of lifestyles, that being of older, on their way to retirement or already retired persons. Does that make sense? That's what I'm thinking. Is that
for somebody that has been up till recently in my position?
Yeah.
Where I've never fathered any children. I have lived on my own. It's pretty much close to 50 years. I've been always quiet. I'm looking at it. I never had that. So therefore, I had to put up with other people's children or music or family, et cetera.
Yeah.
I understand that it is fluid, but there is a big difference between a 55 and older range group than a 62 to 65 and older range group.
Yeah.
As far as maybe something, the way they've been brought up, et cetera, the different generation gaps and so forth.
Mm.
I'm one of the last of the baby boomers.
Well, you have a lot of people sitting right here who
are well within that. Yes, I understand that. And that's why I look at it that, you know, whether it's changing majority age, which I chased for years,
mm-hmm.
or other things, I just can't see switching it from a 62 or 65 age gap down to 55, which to me falls under a completely different category.
Okay. So it's a personal thing more than.
Well, that's why they don't have, you know, they have 55 and up living facilities.
Right.
Especially down south.
Yeah.
Rather than a senior or elderly center,
mm.
which is, yes, I understand is for people that can take care of themselves. Right. It's not assisted living and so on and so forth. But I'm looking at it from a difference of that small age group makes a big difference as far as what happens within that age group.
Okay. Thank you.
And then if I could point out too, you'll see the form that I provided there from the Federal Fair Housing Act, that even in a federally funded facility or complex where the minimum age must be 62, there are exemptions allowed to that to lower it to 55 when at least 80% of the complex is going to be 55 and over, and they are having trouble renting the rest to 62s and over, that they can actually get an exemption down to 55. So I really don't think we are stretching or pushing the envelope on this. I think it's a recognized age for age-restricted complexes. So.
Now, four of the units are rented to people over the age of 62. Is that correct?
Yes, all of which I will point out they provided last time.
No problem.
They have no problem with it. They provided letters. It's in the last month's package.
I wasn't here last month.
Okay.
So,
So
they're the ones who are living there. This isn't going to bother them.
They'd be directly affected.
None of the neighbors are really directly affected.
No.
So. Okay.
Thanks. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Jim Cropley, I second it.
I'm not voting, but I can make motions, right? No, somebody
else. Motion, Arlene Fiano, second Jim Cropley. And I will call the roll. Arlene?
Aye.
Marilee?
Aye.
Jeremy?
No.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Diane?
Aye.
Jim Cropley?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Public hearing is closed. Now we move on to modification of the special permit. This is specific to 7 Loomis Road. Modification of special permit to allow reduction of resident age restriction from 62 to 55 years of age for 6-unit senior housing project, 7 Loomis Road, Michael Bugnacki number PL-24-4.
So I would, if it's possible in this forum, to have you take notice of what we've already said in the first part of the hearing, and that what I would add is that if the regulation amendment is granted, that then, and this is also granted, then we would also be recording a deed that complies with the local, with your town zoning restriction on the 55 and over, and get that done promptly and recorded.
Thank you. Is there any questions or comments from the commission?
Well, I also want to make it noted on my professional standing that this property should not be approved for inhabitancy as per condensing unit location and propane location. I don't know how this ever passed CO, and I'm going to stand on that as a professional, and I will go to bed tonight happy that this ever passed. I don't know how, and I've made this to point to multiple people in town, and it's gone nowhere, and I feel very sad for the town of Bolton, and that's all I have to say.
While we're here, have you put your objections in writing?
No, I don't have to put my objections in writing. That's not my job. My job is to approve, like, never mind, Tom. This makes me sick.
Let me just tell you where I'm coming from on this. I am both an architect, a licensed building official, and and I'm certifiable as a fire marshal, which would deal with the gas.
Okay.
And,
so that being said,
As a designer, I always cite the regulations, and I show whatever dimensions or distances or all the other requirements on my drawings. And when I'm on the other, whenever I'm on the other side, I always cite the specific regulation and the specific violation. For instance, if it's something has to be more than 10 feet away and it's only eight feet away, then that's the violation. And it just makes it easier for the person that has to deal with it to deal with it, either the architect or the owner to correct it, or the plan reviewer to review the drawings, or the inspector to view the installation, if they have those readily available. It's your entirely free choice if you don't want to do that, but that's just
okay. So that being said, and I know that you're a very intelligent human, and I respect you wholeheartedly, Tom. If you drive by this property, you will see 6 condensing units hanging over 120 gallon propane tanks. How that ever passed inspection should not have been allowed. If I tried to do that on a private project, it would have never been passed. This building should not receive a CO, and I've said this to multiple people. I'm going to leave this here so everybody knows my opinion and my professional application to this. So that being said, y'all do what you want to do. I'm going to sign off now. I'm going to go back to silent mode, and I'm sorry that this happened.
Thank you. Noted.
Okay, thank you.
And so just to finish up, you know, we are specifically here tonight asking for the modification of the special permit to allow reduction of the resident age restriction from age 62 to age 55 for this previously approved 6-unit complex here in Bolton on 7 Loomis Road. Thank you.
Tom?
Yes.
What I'm hearing as a conflict is, and what I would like to know for our future, anything that comes before us, is there a difference between senior development versus an age restricted? Because it seems to me if Mike had come before us and hadn't used the word senior center or senior building and just had come for age restricted, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because restriction is obviously at 55. So is there a difference?
We only have a section on traditional multiple dwelling complexes for seniors. That's what we have in our regulations.
Right. And I will also just note that the two examples that were presented by the attorney, one of them says senior housing. So it's right. It's called that. It's called elderly housing. We had discussed when we did this that to make it senior.
I guess my question elderly. I guess my question is for further things that come before us, do we need a regulation change? Is there a difference between senior housing and age-restricted housing? And if so, is it something we need to change so that we don't have this confusion?
Absolutely. I don't think so, because you're defining it in the regulation.
Okay.
So if I could just throw out there, if Mike had come before the board with an elderly complex that was going to also be funded in some way by HUD or the state of Connecticut, the age restriction would be 62 and over. Okay. Yeah. We are not, this is private. There is no federal or state funding involved here. And so and you'll see even in the federal regulations that the age can be dropped to 55 in certain circumstances. And in the surrounding towns that I've identified, it is done by a deed restriction. And so we already have a deed restriction at 62. We're asking for the zoning regulation amendment and then to comply with that with a further deed. So I hope that helps answer that question.
Thank you.
Any
more comments from the audience? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
I move to close the public hearing.
I'll second it.
Manning moves. Tom Robbins seconds it. I will call the roll. Arlene?
Aye.
Marilee?
Aye.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Jeremy Flick?
Aye.
Diane.
Aye.
Jim Cropley.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Okay, the public hearing is closed, and now we are into 6A, old business discussion, possible decision. Zoning regulation amendment to section 450 and so on. And We could start with a motion to change that section 450-6.1N12A, traditional multiple dwelling complexes for seniors, reducing the resident age restriction from 62 to 55 years of age. Do I hear a motion?
That's your job, Tom.
Can I just offer one thing? Yes. That you list the application number in your motion and the effective date, and I would go with 10th or the 15th of January, whatever. Okay. Something easy to.
I move that pursuant to application number PL-24-5, that the Planning and Zoning Commission adopt the zoning regulation amendment to section 450-6.1N12A, traditional multiple dwelling complexes for seniors, reducing the resident age restriction from 62 to 55 years of age. That is my motion.
Effective
January 15th, 2025.
Jim Cropley, I second it.
Is there any further discussion? Anyone want to say restate anything that was said in the public hearing?
Well, you know, I would like to say something. In the 12 or 14 years that I've been on the board, we've had a couple times during that period, we've had, you know, the public come in and talk about what the town needs. And there's always talk about, you know, housing for younger people that can't afford a home, you know, older people who can't afford the home and they still want to live in this town. And, you know, I just think this gives the people of that age, or, I mean, unfortunately, it is age restricted. I mean, but I think we're at least going after one of that age group of people that we're satisfying this with. I mean, every time we talk about we need housing for, you know, other people other than homeowners, you know, whether it's low income housing or senior housing. And this kind of puts a bill. It's a small complex, but, you know, I mean, and something like this really doesn't tax the town at all because, you know, there's no extra homes, there's no kids going in the school. So, I mean, when we've done our surveys, this is something that the town has wanted. I should say the people in the town have wanted.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I will call the roll. Jeremy Flick.
Aye.
Tom Robbins.
Aye.
Diane DiNunzio.
Aye.
Jim Cropley.
Aye.
Marilee Manning.
Aye.
Marlene Fiano.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Item 6B, discussion possible decision. I move to modify under pursuant to application number PL-24-4. I move to modify the special permit to allow reduction of resident age restriction from 62 to 55 years of age for 6-unit senior housing project, 7 Loomis Road, Michael Bagnacki. Is there a second?
Jim Cropley, second it.
Jim Cropley seconds. Is there any further discussion on this motion, which is specific to this applying retroactively this change to this property?
I'd say, yeah, just bring the building up to code.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I will call the roll. Arlene?
Aye.
Marilee?
Aye.
Jim Cropley?
Aye.
Diane?
Aye.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Jeremy Flick?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
So that's 610.
Correct. And so that will go along with it. That'll be possible as soon as the effective date, as soon as the regulations change is effective. Okay.
Yes. Correct.
Item 7, new business.
Thank you. Oh, yeah.
Was there any other new business from staff?
Oh, I'm sorry. There's no other old business and there is no other new business, no.
So we will move to ongoing discussion on the Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations. And I would like to start. With the discussion that we've been having over a period of months about, which started with Tyler Clark wanting to expand his house. And which was too close in his case to the front property line. It was an existing non-conforming house. And after hearing the discussion, I'm ready to take action to change the regulations by the commission without him having to apply for a text amendment or go to the Zoning Board of Appeals or pay $4,000 for a survey in order to do something which my sense of the board is it's something that we would like, we think he ought to be able to do. I would just like to say that good cases make bad law, and we shouldn't make the change because this is a very attractive individual and family with a specific problem, and I think we ought to look at the principle of and then apply it broadly to what do you do with a non-conforming structure, and this staff has offered a suggested change.
For that particular thing?
No, it's about how to expand a legally existing.
Oh no, that was just an example. That wasn't anything we had actually offered, and I only offered that to you as something that Mike and I had looked into because you asked. We hadn't gotten any further with any of that, Tom.
But I like it, and I'll.
Oh, okay.
I like it because I think it's a good basis for discussion that we could take to a public hearing and have it aired publicly, let people have a chance to talk about it, and then so let me just tell you what it is. And it says a legally existing building or structure non-conforming as to the front, side, and or rear setback requirements or minimum lot size requirements of these regulations may be expanded, extended, or enlarged, provided that a zoning permit has been issued and that any such expansion, extension, or enlargement is no closer to the property line than the existing building or structure. Does not create a public safety problem or health hazard, including but not limited to sight lines for the motoring public, and is in conformity with all other requirements of these regulations, but not including any lot coverage restriction that might otherwise be applicable. And I thought that was well worded. It could apply to any zone, and it could apply to any case, and. And I think it directly addresses whether we really mean in our regulations to restrict the expansion of non-conforming structures when they're too close to a property line.
Basically, that's saying they have to stay in the footprint, but they can go up. Am I interpreting that?
No, you would not be able on the side where you are non-conforming. You would. This is even more general than that. On the side where you're non-conforming, you would not be permitted to build it closer. You know, you wouldn't be permitted to violate the setback even more. But on the other sides, you could expand it, and you could go up within the height limitations and the zoning regulations
on all sides, right?
Right.
I'm in favor of it. I think it's a good idea. You're lucky my wife's not here. Having twins, she wouldn't call a problem. That's she would call it a joy. Eddie's not even here, but he was here because his wife had twins.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Like I said, it's this is a very attractive case. And,
yeah, it is.
And we should.
I agree.
And what I'm thinking is that we are very concerned about setbacks because it creates a certain amount of privacy. Right. It creates so I think the restrictions that we have are reasonable. However, when you have a non-conforming structure, you're not going to make it worse if you build on.
No.
Or build on it, or extend it to a side where it's not non-conforming.
Most people with non-conforming structures do not super improve it. They just make it adapt it so it's a little more livable.
Well,
yeah, it's not like it's going to be.
Maybe.
I'm in favor of it.
Well, and this is what you see as the most attractive part is the fact that is its universality.
That's right. Anyone could benefit from it.
Doesn't appear to pose any restrictions around the lake or places where we have other issues.
I think the only thing of the lake that came up with something besides footprints is height. They were saying that they were worried that had people were buying properties right on the lake and then building like three-story buildings, which affected everyone's else. All their neighbors enjoyment of that lake. But this talks to height restrictions.
I would think most of our non-conforming homes are older homes.
Yes.
And smaller homes.
Yep.
And people buy starter homes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to make the house larger and improve the area, I don't see it happening. I don't think there was that many non-conforming homes that were built after 1980, but there may be a few. But
so I do have one question. Overall, I think it's a great idea, but I just want to. This probably is more so of a question for the zoning enforcement officer. Would we potentially coming to any issues with impervious structures? So if I heard Tom correctly. Only the side of a property that's in non-compliance, you couldn't expand outward, but the additional sides could be expanded if they wanted to expand, not just vertically, but outward on the non-issue sides. Could we potentially run into an issue with impervious percentages? So additional patio spaces, if somebody wanted to, you know, add another walkway since they're going to expand their houseward, not just vertical, but in a horizontal plane. Do we have like a percentages of how much of the property in total can be covered by impervious structures?
Yeah, we do have the coverage requirements. So those would still govern how large of an expansion would be permitted.
Okay.
I'm sorry, who was asking the question?
Quan.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, and let's see, was this taken from other regulations?
Yeah, Mike, where the item that I sent Tom was the thing that you had sent me that we were talking about. I don't know where it came from, though.
I think I pulled I cobbled some language together from.
Okay.
I'm not, there may be some, it's like an alphabet soup of zoning regs. There may be a little Ashford in there. I think there's some Woodstock. I can't remember.
Got it. Okay, but it would affect 450-3.3 non-conforming uses.
So that would be where the proposed amendment would live.
Yeah.
Can you say that one more time, Tom? Sorry.
It looks like it would be 450-3.3 non-conforming uses. Part C, where it says no nonconformity of any kind shall be expanded or intensified except as follows. And it looks like we would be adding item number 3.
Okay.
And close in parentheses.
But that would require a public hearing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's the
incentive. It requires everything. Got to go to CRUG, got to go to everything. My suggestion is, if there's a couple of easy ones that we've talked about and found, we compile 3 or 4 of them together and do it that way. So you have one public hearing, but you're having 3 or 4 different things you're looking at. You can do just one if you want. It's up to you. It's whatever you want to do.
Okay, right this minute, I was just trying to get... I was just trying to get the right, so it would be adding 450-3.3C3 would be added. And we can take up, we can have a motion later after we discuss some of these other things.
Okay. I'm not suggesting lot coverage is one of them because I think there's more work to do here, but we went through a bunch of things a couple meetings ago that some of that could be finalized and gone to hearing as well.
Okay. Now what was those good?
I wasn't prepared for you to ask me that question.
I'm not sure if you're going to that section they're talking about, but I saw this term come up several times, the United Village Style Development. I'm not familiar with that.
In our regulations?
No. In your...
In the handout, the 3-page handout for tonight.
Yeah, what page are you on, Merrily?
Page 2 of 3.
Unified.
Yeah, unit.
Oh, it United. Says United. It's unified. I think it's the unified village style. That is a whole zone that we have.
Existing?
That's down on Route 6. It was part of the whole housing thing that happened that just never happened.
Because of the Route 6 alignment?
Nope, it was just done for that area as unified village style type development with housing and commercial, and it's a whole section of our regulations. That's why it's in there.
Well, we date my time here.
The state gave us money.
Mm-hmm.
We got a grant to revise our zoning regulations specifically for an incentive housing zone, and as part of that change to the regulations, we developed this unified village style development concept.
Oh, okay. And it's for this one specific area and nowhere else?
Right.
I think it's for that specific area, but I do believe you can do it like an overlay. Somebody could ask for it. For a different area. Okay. I want to say they were talking about that where Dollar General was at one point.
Okay. But this was on Route 6?
Well, the Dollar General's on 44, but the original mm-hmm. plan was for on Route 6.
And that would comprise of housing and retail and office and whatever, right?
It was kind of mixed use development, right? So Tom, to answer your question, it was back a packet or two ago. It was when we talked about like lot corners and the measurement of lot corner. There was a picture there. There was the modification, a simple modification that would go through staff. And we talked about removing the engineer from part of that. That packet is what I'm referring to. And I didn't know you were going to ask me, so I didn't really, I don't have it handy right now.
No, I understand your point. And I think that to accomplish the goal of this text amendment, it could wait until the February meeting to set a public hearing, have the public hearing in March. And if it was approved, I think it would be effective in time for building this spring. I think that's what Tyler. So I have no objection to packaging all this stuff up at the next meeting.
Okay.
And we could discuss building coverage now while we've got the paper in front of us.
Okay.
Okay.
So basically you have three pages of the references for all the areas in the regulations. Zoning regulations where lot coverage is referenced, where building coverage is referenced. And then the third page has lot coverage that Mike had mentioned last time from Ashford in their Lake District. And the question was, why are they different? There is actually, if you'll notice the very first page, there is no definition for lot coverage in our zoning regulations. There is a definition, however, for building coverage or building coverage area. So it's really the commission has to decide whether you want to keep the two separate, whether you want them. We're just going to do a coverage altogether, which I believe is what the Ashford example shows. Is that right, Mike? It's just called lot coverage and it includes everything.
Right, yeah.
Everybody I know who's in the room has this in front of them. I don't know if everybody else has it. Okay. Arlene's got it on her phone, okay.
Is it that last page on the document in the one of the emails I think I'm looking at?
Right. So
number 7.
Yeah, that's the language that's from Ashford. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I would find it useful to have an additional definition for lot coverage, which would be inclusive of building coverage. Because in some zones, you might want to have, you might want to restrict building coverage while leaving the lot coverage, if it was developed with, parking and sidewalks and plazas and so on. So that's my preference. I would like to see an additional definition.
Okay, and still keep the two separate. Okay. And are you okay with the coverage that we, so it looks like for multiple dwelling complexes, the maximum lot coverage, which would include everything, is 15%. Same with the multiple dwelling complex. I'm sorry, it's this same thing. The maximum lot coverage for continuing care requirement, retirement community is higher at 25%.
So
I think we would have to adjust those to the new definitions.
Go ahead, Mike.
Two things that I think led us here, and say them out loud with the assumption that I'm the only one that forgot. One, we've had some conversations with commercial property owners that are trying to expand their business, but are limited in their ability to utilize the lot that they have. And I think at least my perspective is, if we don't have a lot of commercial space and a lot of room for expansion, then we should let commercial businesses expand to some extent on the properties that they have already developed, right? We've already lost that, that property is never going to be a greenfield again. And so I think we want to look a little bit more flexibly at that. So the part of that, I think, is to increase some of these standards. And we could probably pull together a couple of adjacent towns to get a sense of what their numbers are. The other thing is, at best, I think lot coverage, whatever we want to call it, lot coverage, building coverage, separate or combined, if you're going to separate it out, I think at best it should just be by zone. If you tie it to anything beyond zone, you make it impossible for that building to change uses, because you're telling them a CCRC can have 25%, but then if it flips to something else, a multiple dwelling complex, the coverage is automatically 10, which means they become non-conforming. And if they want to make improvements, it just creates complication. And the use really, I don't know that there's a strong argument to be made that a multiple dwelling complex, there's some reason why that should be allowed 15%, but a CCRC can have up to 25. So I think from a reuse perspective, it's okay to tie that coverage to the zone, because, you know, more intense development happens in industrial zones, et cetera. But that's kind of, I think, where my head was when we talked about this the last time.
I think that makes sense.
So I have a question. I've been thinking about this, and the reason that we limit the impervious coverage is mostly for rainwater and capture and trying to maintain runoff and all that, correct? Or am I wrong?
In my mind, and I'm not, you know, an engineer, but I think that, yes, the intent is a lot of it is stormwater. How do you deal with that? But it's also, I think, wanting to have green space, wanting there to be landscaping, wanting to make sure that the building massing and just how these buildings are situated on a lot is appropriate and in keeping with what everybody's used to seeing. And so when you develop to every corner inch of the property, you know, it probably doesn't look the way everybody wants it to. But, you know, nowadays with the way that sites can be designed.
That's right. That's what I was going to say.
You can attenuate for stormwater even with a site that's nearly completely developed. So there's ways that you can do it. And even at, I mean, 15%, you know, you end up with these, you know, with large lot sizes, it's really very little of the property. So even if you increase these by double, you know, you're still leaving a substantial portion of the property that wouldn't be covered.
I think for businesses with all the technology that's out there today for rainwater capturing, businesses need to be dealt with differently than residents, for sure. And even some residential designs that want to have patios and sidewalks and different things, those can all be designed. If the homeowner wants to put that much money into the home, they can pay for these stormwater retention. You can get as complicated as something in the ground, or you can get as simple as something that's, you know, a working rain garden. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that I understand in residential wanting to have some green space, but I don't think it's right. If it is, and it is mostly the stormwater, I don't think it's right in businesses to be as restrictive. That's my thinking.
The language that was at the bottom of page 3 from Ashford was, we did that for the Lake District because we wanted to your point, allow reasonable use of property. We wanted to track coverage, but we didn't want the applicant to have to spend thousands of dollars on an engineer to bring a plan before us, right? So we have a limit on the amount of coverage. And then we allow, I think, a 50% increase. You know, I can't remember if it's 15, we allow it to go up to 20 or something by special permit to the commission. And we explain what lot coverage is and what it isn't, and you know, what they can do sort of without needing an engineer. But that was with the intent of trying to deal with the lakes. You don't want the stormwater and a lot of flow, because the increase in temperature is what affects the water quality and invasive species growth and all those things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what they are in around the lake here, what the percentage is off the top of my head, but
maybe we need regulations that deal with our lake area, a regulation for business, and a regulation for
again, you can do that by zone. The lake area is its own type of zone.
Right.
Yeah. That's what, yeah.
So I think we would probably not want to do anything to provide for more coverage in that area. What's that, the R2? R3?
R3, I think.
Because
the lake, I think the layer at the lake has R1, and are you talking about the lake, our lake?
Yeah.
Yeah, one side has real compact and the other side is regular houses.
So the entire lake is surrounded by the light blue zone, which is R3.
R3, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm sorry, one exception, and that's the lake house. Hmm. And that's RMUZ. But other than that, everything else is, so you could by the R3 zone have a certain lot coverage, whatever it is now. Maybe you don't want to increase it, or maybe you don't want to change it at all and leave that. And then you can do something different in the commercial or the industrial zone if you want it. Because like Mike said, I think when he started talking, this really came up because of the businesses and wanting to expand and not being able to because of the limit of the coverage.
Yeah, and it all makes sense when you think about it.
Is there any other discussion on lot coverage, building coverage? Did we give these people just a whole bunch of homework to do?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
The last, very last page, if you are wish to move on, I just wanted to, we've had this discussion before, and this is about notifying abutters, I'll use the term loosely. The statute actually, what I included here was the statute, which is regarding hearings and decisions and how you notify people. So the only requirements in the state statute for notification is the publication of a legal notice twice prior to the public hearing. It goes on to say that in addition to the notice, the commission can provide for additional notice. Such regulations, ours do this, shall include provisions that the notice be mailed to persons who own land that is adjacent to the land of the subject hearing, or be provided by posting a sign on the land. So we require the sign, and we ask the applicant to notify landowners, but not necessarily adjacent. They're 500 feet out. And I'm just wondering if you want to look at this for a couple reasons. Mike and I were talking about the other day, if you are an aggrieved party, you are only considered aggrieved if you are within, what is it, Mike, 100 feet of the property, right?
A landowner of land of real property within 100 feet of the subject parcel. Yep.
Right. So if I'm 300 feet out and I've been notified and I come in and I say my piece to the commission, I don't have any right, I don't have any standing in any kind of lawsuit or objection to that property by state statute. I think you do get notice out anyway by posting the sign and by posting the, I don't know how many people actually read the legal notices in the paper anymore, but we do post them on our website. And you do have a sign up for 10 days prior to the public hearing. So anybody who passes by the sign can come in. It's why we have people state their name and address when they give their comments. I'm just looking at this from the standpoint that, you know, notifying people 100 feet from a property versus 500 feet from a property is quite a different cost for the applicant to do that. If you're okay with that, that's fine. I'm not sure we're actually within the requirements of the statute, but nobody has said otherwise, and just pointing it out. Our actual regulations say notice is mandated by statute, and then they go on to talk about this, the 500 feet, which is not mandated by statute.
So we're overprotecting ourselves. Yeah. It's not always bad.
You also may be giving somebody who's 500 feet away a little bit of false hope, but.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because I mean, if they think they have a say in it, then it comes yeah, later, don't.
They can come in and talk. They just don't have standing to, or they're not aggrieved. They don't have any ability to challenge the decision either by whatever the commission decides. They may think because they've been notified, but.
But anyone can come in and talk right. about it if they live on the other side of town.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody within 100 feet, if they have an opinion we're going to weigh the opinion if they're 100 feet or 500 feet. But we usually come to our own conclusion,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't know.
But if they have standing, then that opens the door to a possible legal challenge. Am I thinking?
Well, let's say that we took some action as a result of a public hearing, and. A property owner within 100 feet felt aggrieved. Would they have standing to challenge the action?
If they are within 100 feet, yes, they would.
Okay.
If they are 150 mm-hmm. feet, they would not.
Perhaps we might want to specify the notice or something in the notice that notification does not necessarily.
We don't notice them. We don't do that. That's the applicant's responsibility. And all the applicant by state law, all the applicant has to send is the legal notice, because the legal notice contains all the information that the statute requires. Time, okay. place, what Got the it. Property is, what the application is for.
Well, like a lot of things in life, you can have minimums and suggested, and then leave it up to the applicant. As long as they get the 100, we can say the minimum is 100, but our precedent has been 500. You have a choice. And then everybody's covered. I mean,
I don't see why we would want to stand strongly in the 500 if it's not really supported by any statute.
Well, 500 feet is not, it's a couple of lots.
Yeah.
Two or three lots. Yeah. And people who are within, who are that close to, say multiple dwelling complex, might very well want to have something to say about it at the public hearing, and would feel deprived if they weren't hadn't received a letter.
Right. So the other. So,
Carolee, you know as well as the rest of us that A lot of people don't attend our meetings unless they get an invitation. Good, bad, or otherwise.
True. but at the same time, like you were saying before, that you hold out hope that someone who's within the 500 all of a sudden thinks that, you know, I can stop this, when in reality they could voice their opinion, but they can't necessarily stop this. So I don't know where the balance, I guess if they have enough interest in it to come here, then they will find out that part of it. Right?
Okay. Well, that means that you would have to tell them when they come there that, you know.
You don't know where they, you're making presumptions about whether they're within 100 feet or not. I'm just wondering if the sign is enough and 100 feet and you seem to be all kind of clinging to 500. If you're in the lake, 500 foot is a heck of a lot more notifications than 100 feet.
Yeah.
So you're in a more dense area, obviously, but. Well, you can think about it. I'm just pointing it out. I don't know if it's worth asking the town attorney. I know other towns, you know, put in different, some towns have 200, 300, whatever, but I don't think it's illegal what you're doing, but it certainly is, I think, beyond what would be considered adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just built the house on Coventry Lake and we had to send letters to the abutters only. But we're a really congested area. And if I would have had to send them in 100 feet, instead of sending four out, I would have had to probably send six out. And if I had to go 500 feet, I probably would have had to send 12 out. So, I mean, Coventry is just the abutters. There's no 100 feet.
Did you have to post a sign?
Yep. We had to post a sign both for building and when we went to the commissions, and we also had to post a sign because we were demoing the existing house, and we had to post that out front too. And we had to send letters to all the abutters that we were tearing the house down, just the abutters.
Well, you all can think about that one if you'd like.
Okay, so I'll be in touch, Patrice, about some specific motions for text amendment changes based on what we've discussed both now and previously, and then we can have a whole list and decide, you know, what we want to send to public hearing and what we don't.
Okay.
At the next meeting, is there anything anybody wanted to raise now in the next 7 minutes?
Yeah, we should have a bunch going to public hearing, shouldn't we?
Yeah, that's the idea. Okay. Hearing none, I will ask Jim Cropley to do his thing.
I move adjourn.
Is there a second? Second, Arlene. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? No. The ayes have it. Thank you all. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Good
Thank
night.
You, everyone.
Thank
Happy
you.
Night.
Good night.
Thank you.